Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Save big money on everything for your next project at Menards. Spring is here, making it the perfect time for outdoor projects. Suncast storage sheds are an excellent solution for protecting outdoor lawn and gardening tools. They're easy to assemble, and the all-weather construction provides water resistance and UV protection. Save big on Suncast storage sheds. View our selection of Suncast products today in-store and on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey listeners, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more.
Last year was a hard year for such a long time. This year's gonna be
Hey everyone, welcome to the Helping Friendly Podcast. This is episode 74. We have a bunch of great guests here to help us recap the entire year of 2015, which is an ambitious undertaking, I think. We have Diana, who's at Diana2Ns with some underscore or something on the Twitter. Hey Diana, welcome back.
Hello, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you back. And we have Allie, who's been on before at Allie Dice, and Chris, who's making his Helping Friendly Podcast debut. Thanks, Chris, for joining.
Anytime. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad that you joined. And we have Zach, who's at the Baby's Mouth, who's here as well. Hey, Zach.
Hey.
And Jonathan is here. Brad is not here. Brad is putting his kids to bed, which is what we say on every single podcast at the intro, and he's supposed to get on later. So we're going to talk about the entire year of 2015 Fish here, and we're going to do that through some music, of course, but We had some stuff to look at, the fish.net piece that came out with the top 10 of 2015, and Zach put together an essay on his take on 2015, and we have a lot of people still thinking about it and considering it. And also, we should be getting some dates soon, right? Are we getting dates soon?
March.
March? Fucking A.
Always March.
No dates. Never.
No dates ever. So
I heard they were going on hiatus.
They are. Well, they are until summer. So we have a lot to talk about, but we do want to hop right in. We decided to split this up into three parts because taking on a whole year of Phish is obviously a big undertaking. So the first part, we're going to play tracks that Diana, Chris, Allie all chose, and then we're going to chat about them. This first part's about the new material that came out in 2015. So we'll talk about the music after we hear it. And then part two will be kind of the idea of how the improv has evolved in 2015. And we'll listen to some music that that will set the frame for that. And then the third part, we're just going to leave you with some music because these guys picked a lot of great stuff. And we wanted to just put out part three, just music, no talking. So you'll have several hours of Phish 2015, courtesy of Chris and Allie and Chris and Allie and Diana. So thank you guys for joining, and we're looking forward to having a good chat. But first, let's just get into a few tracks from 2015, and we'll talk about them after. Hey-o.
I prayed for war. Thank you. Inside all is clear. But if you hold All right, welcome back, everyone.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil Story Made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Hope you enjoyed that music. The first thing we heard was Blaze On from Shoreline, which was a pick from Diana. Then we heard the No Man, No Man's Land into Twist from The Man, which was a combo of Chris and Ali, and I kind of cheated because obviously Twist isn't new material, but it was just... It was too good to not include there. And then Mercury from Dix, which I think is kind of an interesting new song that a lot of people have been talking about. But Diana, why don't you kick us off and just tell us why you chose this Blaze On and what this track meant to you this year.
Sure. So first of all, following the first two shows of the tour, and then coming out with six new songs, seven if you include Scabbard, which I guess was a Fish debut. I mean, that's pretty cool. Not really something they've done in past summer tours. So it was a pretty exciting start to the summer with all this new material to see where they were going to go with it. And, you know, that was Shoreline was the third show of the summer. And for them to take that brand new song and open the second set with it and just like tear it apart. And the first 46 minutes, I think, of that set were the Blaze On into Twist into Light. I mean, they couldn't have, you know, it couldn't have proven itself better, I think. The way that it was played, it gets dark, it gets dirty, it already is type 2, even though it hasn't been type 1 yet. You know, it doesn't have a type 1. So, I don't know, it was just super impressive and really got me excited to see where they're going to take the rest of the new stuff.
Awesome. It was a great jam too. I mean, it was really impressive. Chris and Ali, what's your take on this song?
I mean, I think overall the new material is great. It's the best batch of new material the band has had. Oh God, you've got to definitely go back into 1.0 for it. I mean, it blows the wingsuit material out of the water. Blaze On, catchy, fun. Took a little while to truly love, so that Shoreline jam definitely helped. I mean, there's some really bad lyrics in Blaze On, but it's still such a fun song. Mercury, I hope they bring that back. They definitely, you know, spent so much time working on it. But I mean, the real gem of the new songs is No Man's Land. I mean, fiery, groovy, everything about that song is what you want to hear when you go to a show.
So that's your clear favorite new tune,
obviously. Oh, without a doubt.
Zach, what's your take on the new stuff?
It was curious how they sort of really, really tried to rework Mercury throughout the year. And there was a lot of sound checks and a lot of, I think, maybe three or four versions that were quite different. I think it'll probably take a really expert producer in the studio to make sense of it and to help them figure out the parts. I think Mercury's definitely, I think, interesting. I sort of agree with Chris that, like, you know, No Man's is sort of like the just, you know, the newest anthem or sort of thing that I was actually going to ask the group if anyone thought or had heard of this idea that No Man was like an outcropping of the Dick Simple from 831 and then the Down with Disease from Miami. It's sort of, if you guys had ever had heard that idea, that there's, so basically it was, you know, just the same chord progression and rhythmic association, which would sort of go back to, you know, just the idea of repurposing the best jams and turning them into songs. I think that's something that you're doing.
Are you talking about the Dick Simple in 2014?
Yeah. The 14, yeah, the first night, that Friday, Simple and the Ghost. I think I've heard it. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I said I haven't heard it in there. I always hear David Bowie's Fame in the second half of that.
Yes.
And I have been in a death match with my fellow comrades at Fishnet trying to get them to add the David Bowie Fame tease in the second half of the Simple.
No way.
I should have said at the beginning about your fishnet contributions, Chris. First of all, thanks for doing that. And second of all, I think this is our first fishnet guest.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow.
You want to talk about why Coventry was an awesome festival?
Yeah, totally.
Slow down, Tiger.
I'd love to. Jonathan, what's you want to jump in?
Yeah, you know, I want to say that I agreed with Chris's comment that Blaze On took a minute to get me, or for me to get it, but this Shoreline version definitely helped, and I went back to it today, in fact, and as I was convalescing, and it was, I almost danced, which is saying something because I can't dance right now. Some would say ever, but I thought it was Blaze On is, I think I texted you today that you could almost chart the year by listening to the different versions of Blaze On, if only they had, you know, done it in the last run. It's a great song. No Man's, while we're kind of talking overall, I think No Man's really, somebody I know said it pretty astutely, a little bit cynically, that it sounds like they finally put lyrics to the that Fish 3.0 funk jam that they had been toying with for a while. Again, kind of a cynical statement, but there's something to that. And then I'm glad you didn't leave out the twist, because this twist, the pairing there, this is a solid piece of music as anything they did this year.
Yeah.
And I'm one of those guys who just loves Mercury, and I really look forward to seeing what they do with it as we go forward.
So, what says the most about the new tunes is that they used one into Midnight for the gag, and then one right out of Midnight on New Year's Eve. Yeah. And I mean, for them, and not only did they do that, everybody went apeshit for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to think of the only times that I can think since I started seeing the band I started seeing them, my first show was at the end of 94, so I started seeing regularly in 95. The only time I could think that everybody wanted to see the new tunes when they were at a show was when the 97 batch came out with Ghost, Limb by Limb, yeah. And then probably again when Trace started playing a bunch of the Tab tunes in 99 and Jabu and Sand. Mm-hmm. But besides
we were chasing them pretty hard in summer 95 too. They started playing new stuff out west, and we were like, oh, I want to see this, yeah, I want to see this.
Yeah, we definitely dug free, and we dug, but nothing like this. Like, you know, because I guess maybe because there's a lot more shows back then. But it was a cool feeling, especially seeing that they delivered on New Year's Eve with the new tunes.
Especially, yeah. I think following the year prior when all those Fuego tunes were kind of like drilled into us, regardless of whether we wanted to hear them or not. You know, the top four songs played in 2014 were 555 Fuego. You know, The Line and Wingsuit. Like, it's a lot from the new album, and kind of like I think. Maybe, you know, taking a breather from those was a good thing. And hearing these new ones, it was like, okay, these are new ones. Hopefully they replace those a little bit, and those get to take a break a little bit.
Yeah, just thinking back to 2013 at the Garden, I remember that whole run saying, I know they're going to play Fuego out of New Year's. I just know it. And I was so excited at the time, and then they played Light, which was amazing, and so that was really cool. And this time around, 2 years later, it just seemed like the either Blaze On or No Man's was rather predictable. But I mean, in both jams, it was like, wow. And I admittedly am not a huge Blaze On fan overall, but they just keep jamming it over and over and over.
Yeah, they do.
Where even the hokey song is not even bothering me anymore. So
yeah, I don't know what it is about the lyrics. I love them. I think they're
I
so
don't
great.
Too.
I think it's
because
I'm like
a lover.
I think it's because I'm
just like nails on a chalkboard. But
it's just because I'm very simple when it comes to lyrics, and I understand all the words, and it's like, you know, and it's just about. I also feel like it's like some sort of acknowledgement of how far along they've made it in life, you know.
I
and it's just sort of like the who gives a shit what happens, let's just keep playing music, you know. But I didn't think, Ali, when to your point, I was watching the webcast for the 31st, and I was like, what are they going to play after New Year's? And then once it started, I was like, of course, it had to be. Yeah. I should have thought of this all along, but that was a pretty great, great placement.
And I was also going to say, even with No Man's, it took me a little while. It's new songs, I don't know, it takes me a little bit. I'm the type of person, through repetition, I tend to like songs a little better. And kind of going back to the man, No Man's, right? Or as we like to say here, Grunion and Grunion Cans. Always a good song. you know, that particular version that night at the man, I was like, wow, did they actually kind of jam that? That was really cool. And then Twist, you know, just kind of deviating for a moment.
Yeah, what did you call it in the notes, Allie? The little jam that could,
the little jam that could, because yeah. it was like the Energizer Bunny, right? It just kept going and going and going. And at the show, it was surreal because it was such a chill jam for such, you know, to build up until I think about the 13th minute. And then there, you kind of hear that Egyptian sound. And, you know, at the show, it was just strange because it was like people were like, what's going on here? And then they just built up to that amazing crescendo and everyone was just going bananas and we kind of looked at each other like, was that 20 something minutes? Like it seemed to go by in three. It was pretty amazing. And then it's always great when you can, you know, re-listen and say, all right, that was awesome. Especially, I have to also give a nod to that gin with the Mutron at the beginning of the set. I love that.
That whole set is pretty spectacular. As a 3.0-er, we don't really get five song sets ever. Yes. So when we do and it ends with Hood, I go home a happy camper.
That's a good night.
So you mentioned the Mutron. Let's talk about the Fare Thee Well, the impact. We haven't talked about that. And I just, before we go into that, the Phish played 27 shows in 2015. And 38 and 14, 41 and 13, 37 in 2012. So much, we saw much less Phish this year, but we also saw a lot of like side gigs and the Fare Thee Well stuff. So I'd love to hear people's thoughts on how you think Fare Thee Well or other side projects have kind of contributed to where they are now.
Well, it was interesting at the beginning of the summer because you could really hear, especially when they're on the West Coast, you can really hear a lot of the Dead sound in every show. Are they going to jam the Dead? Wow, that really sounded like China Ryder. And, you know, I didn't document every single time that they sounded Dead-y, but there are definitely a number of jams throughout the summer. The first half, I think, more than the second. And then, that kind of Dead hoopla seemed to die off towards the end of the summer, but I think the biggest contributor was Trey just took a breather, right, or took some deep breaths. He wasn't trying to rush through everything. He was actually just sitting back and saying, wow, okay, I guess I'll let you guys jam too, which was amazing. I think even just watching in Bend from the webcast, we were watching him and he just seemed like, okay, I guess I'll just sit back here too. It was really neat.
I think one of the biggest contributions of the Fare Thee Well stuff, and Trey talked about this in the New Yorker Festival interview. If you guys haven't listened to that, you absolutely should. It's fantastic. And it's so cool. You know, we rarely get to hear him talk like this, but you know, he talks about having lunch with Jerry's daughter and hanging with the whole, the guys in the Dead. And he talks about, you know, all of this after that, calling Phish and calling Mike and telling them, you know, I appreciate you. I love you. I'm so happy that we can do this together still. And I think, you know, that was a big realization of his from playing with these guys and seeing like, this is, you know, I'm so lucky to have this. And I think it put the whole thing into perspective, and they came into the summer with like a new energy and a new vitality and a gratefulness for us, for, you know, each other. So I thought that was a really good thing that he took from it.
Yeah.
The one thing that I gotta say that is, I might disagree with Allie a little on this. With the exception of the Shoreline show, I didn't really hear much Dead in anything they were doing. Shoreline, though, you know, at one point you're hearing The Wheel and Twist, you're hearing China, you're hearing Ryder and Light. those who say that, oh, you can hear Jerry and Trey now, are so full of shit. Either that, or they haven't been listening to the guy play guitar for the last 20 years.
Super, super high. Also,
because he's not playing any different than he did in the last 20 years. Now, what they are doing that's differently, though, he's not playing different, is that he has more patience. So they're letting things build. And a great example of that is that twist from The Man. That jam was dead at least two or three times, but they all just waited patiently for something to happen. And I think that's the biggest difference that you hear in their sound. He's not playing like Jerry. He's just having a little more patience with where things are going.
You need to do the accent dance.
So, Chris, you say you don't think his playing has changed much over the past 20 years?
No, I'm saying that if you think that Trey suddenly sounds like Jerry, you haven't paid that.
Oh, okay.
If you're suddenly hearing Trey play today,
yeah.
Oh, man, listen to all the Jerry in his play since he played fairly well, then you haven't been listening to the guy play for 20 years.
Got it.
I think the addition of the Mutron or whatever is a definite thing that people would then lead people to say it sounds like Jerry. That has a, you know, very similar sound to it.
But that's just, that's like pretty superficial to just throw a pedal and you can sound like anyone, but the playing itself,
he can't be like Jerry because at this point in his career Jerry was no longer there, and I hate to be serious about it, but that's the thing to blaze on about, and that's the thing to be super grateful for, is that, you know, Trey is sort of, not that he ever, I don't think, only measured himself against Jerry or even all that more than Jimmy Page or Jimi Hendrix or 500 other guitarists or Pat Metheny or anyone, you know.
If you kind of listen to the chatter through the beginning of the summer, there were a lot of people who were very focused, hyper-focused on the Dead because of Fairly Well, which, of course, is the topic of discussion right now, right? So it was, whether it was, perception is truth, right? So people are listening for it, so they hear it. If they're not listening for it, it's probably always been there to begin with. But it was interesting. And then, of course, there was, where was it, at Alpine, I think, on Jerry's birthday, where there was so much hype. Like, are they going to play the Dead? Are they going to play the Dead? And they just did their thing. So I thought that was great. You know, they just said, nope, we're Fish. That's who we are. We're not playing the Dead. Done that, been there. But I agree with Diana, though. I'm sure practicing so much Jerry and so much Grateful Dead all year, I mean, he must have just been immersed in the Jerry character and so humbled to be able to take that opportunity to play like that. And then I remember the first night of Fairly Well in Santa Clara where Trey looked so frozen on stage. And then by the time we saw him in Soldier Field, he was just having a blast. So, I mean, just to have that moment to be able to do that, you know, and realize, hey, I'm alive and I've taken all the right steps to stay on this earth rather than, you know, the person I was about, you know, 10 years ago-ish. I think it says a lot.
Yeah, I think the rehearsal and learning the material and playing with those guys, of course, it's not going to make him sound like Trey, sound like Jerry, even when he's playing Grateful Dead songs with the members of the Grateful Dead. He still sounded like Trey playing Grateful Dead songs. But what he did do, and I think when you're talking about how he was far more rigid at Santa Clara than he was at Chicago, as an example of what I'm about to describe sinking in, is that he learned the language of Grateful Dead jamming firsthand. He had listened to it, he was familiar with it, as are many of us, but it's very different when you actually have to speak it, and so we did. And one of the things he learned from them, and I know he mentioned it in one of the interviews, that it was the patience and letting the jam kind of do its thing, instead of just pushing and pushing and pushing and just, you know, and slowing the song down and letting the song unfold. And so then Fish Tour came along, and sure, lots of people were like, oh, play Jerry, but it's Fish Tour. And, you know, but Trey comes in with a few new words, a few new elements from this other language that he's, reinserting, because they probably informed the root of Fish. Certainly they informed some of the roots of Fish, but he's reinserting them into what they're doing on stage. And so it did, I think it did impact the jams in a very positive way. And, well, I'm just pleased I was here to hear it.
Less ripcords.
Yeah.
And, fanning. Yeah. Fanning.
Well, so Chris, I want to go back to the question you raised, or you pointed out originally, and that you kind of answered, that you think the new material this year was much better than the wingsuit material. Even five.
The name of the album was Fuego, you guys.
Right. And I just call it Wingsuit because that's what Halloween was called. But five songs compared to 12, but you still think the five this year are better than the 12 we got last year.
It's not even close. I mean, if you look at the best stuff that came out of Fuego, I guess you got to give number one to Fuego, even though, I mean, let's not hold it against the song that it's been so overplayed and they decided to stop jamming it out.
It's a tiny bit of a bummer when they play it now. But
after Fuego, you've probably got what, Wingsuit?
I think Winter Queen's amazing.
Winter Queen really might be.
I also think
that's like the only one for me.
Yeah. So there's how many?
I mean,
songs
Monica, are Wombat, also good.
No. I mean, come on. I mean, they wrote between Blaze On, No Man's Land, and Mercury. You've got three super solid second set tunes.
Yeah, look at the amount of jams that have come just from Blaze On alone. Again, I can get past the hokey song. If they're going to jam, 15-ish minutes every time, and it's a good jam, you can sing whatever you want. I don't care.
Yeah, especially with something like Wingsuit, like it can get massive, but it takes so long to get there. You know, sometimes it really deflates the energy of what was going on before it. And both Blaze On and No Man's really kind of, come out of the gates.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Well,
how's their plays after a rock? It's 25 minute down with disease. Sometimes it gets a little crazy. You need a breather. I could see a Wingsuit or a Winter Queen, kind of a ballad, like
need a breather. Come on.
But some of us feel old.
I guess I'm getting old. I guess this is Zach matured.
Yeah. Zach 4.0. the Winter Queen and Diana, your point is a good one, which is that these new songs kind of take off from the beginning and there's not like none of them are ballads, I guess. I don't really understand what Mercury is at all.
Shade. What about that one?
Mercury is
I have to say when they played Mercury at Dick's in that second section, I was a little bit confused. I mean, I know a lot of people really like that song. We're really looking forward to hearing the kind of build up and see what they would do with it. And I like what they did at Dick's, but I remember at the show and then on re-listen, I'm like, in the second set, this is so odd for me. But there are a lot of people that really liked that arrangement, and I could see why. It's kind of a journey. You're not going, there's no massive peak. You're not, it's not really slow. It's right in the middle. They just went for it. And it was, it was like driving on the highway on cruise control with really pretty scenery, I guess.
Wow, that's good. I can picture really that.
Allie, on that front, were you talking about the Dick's Mercury just then?
Correct.
Clay, that made me think of something. First real interesting jam of the year, I think, is the Ben Simple. It was really, I don't know, to me, really just sort of really funky little 4 minute, 5 minute breakdown. And I feel like that and the Dick's Mercury share a lot, where it's sort of like they sort of decide to like do something with it. It wasn't an organic one. It was like, and now we're going to kind of go into a deeper, darker little driving jam. But I everything you were saying about Mercury, I think is really fascinating and totally on point. It is a journey-like song. It sort of seems like a collage. It's sort of like a better Fuego. It's got these kind of mix and match parts and these sections. Almost, it's kind of it's vintagey. It almost could be like a Reba or a Squirming Coil or something that has these sort of collaged elements. I don't know. I think it's a really refined, great song. I'm not surprised that people really glom onto it. I totally get the Blaze On, No Man's kind of fat. It's just easier to like those songs, I guess, and just sort of hard to dislike. But Mercury, you know, I think the fact that they had issues with it and were trying to work it out, that makes it interesting. That, I mean, that makes
a little upsetting that it didn't come out on the Holiday Runner Mexico. So I'm hoping that doesn't mean it's shelved.
I'm really surprised at the positive talk about this. I like it. I would have thought there would be more judgment towards it, because it kind of, to me, is time turns elasticy. Mm-hmm. You know, it has this these parts and this journey, and the first couple times it was played, it that weird section where they just stop and then they start again. Luckily, by that Dick's version, it was a little fixed, and they were playing in between there. But it still feels like a rough cut, and it needs definite refining. And I totally agree with you, Allie. During when they played it at Dick's, I was like laughing. Actually, I was like, "What is going on here? Like, fine, like this is cool, but I don't really understand this here."
Listen to Yes records. Very seriously, listen to some Yes records, then you'll understand what they're doing.
I'm willing to give it a chance. I'm surprised that there's such overwhelming positivity about this. I thought the first time I heard it that people were going to be very mixed on it.
I was very harsh on it. I was actually very harsh on it until Dex.
I was a little rough on it at first. Like,
I think they finally got it going on.
It's definitely a work in progress still, right? I mean, I think we all acknowledge that. But yeah, the Dex one is great.
Time Turns Elastic, I have to address this real quick. Time Turns Elastic was the prog rock tune that tried too hard. There's a whole section in the record store, in the used record store, full of those. And this song belongs there, where it will collect dust. That is, Time Turns Elastic belongs there, where it will collect dust and never be played. Mercury, something else. It's the next level. Phish has a lot of songs in that area where Mercury belongs, which are complicated, you know, not necessarily conducive to deep jamming, but they've got a good thing going on. Gaiuti, for example.
Yeah.
Well, at least with Mercury, it's 11 minutes, right? So Time Turns Elastic was 20 plus. I think that's the core difference there.
Just enough time for a large crew to go to the restroom, get back.
Yeah. That was like piss, beer, hot dog, say hi to all your friends, come back to your seat, and you're halfway through.
Well, that's when the good part of the song starts, actually.
Exactly.
There's no good part of that song.
The relatively better part of that song.
Relatively better.
How about the less horrible part of that song?
There you go.
All right, we've come to common ground. So this is where we're going to wrap up our discussion, part one on the Phish 2015, talking about the new material, and part two we're going to talk about the improv, and we have some great picks from that. But Allie, who's at Allie Dice on Twitter, thanks for joining.
You're very welcome.
Appreciate it.
Glad to join.
Chris Glushko, XC Glush, Diana, and Zach and Jonathan, thanks guys, and we'll see you all at part two, which will come out in a few days. Keep on rocking.
Last year was a hard year for such a long time. This year's gonna be ours. Last year was a hard year for such a long time.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.